Well, good evening. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we always welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Don Wiskin, and he's from talking about Carnivite, which is something he's been working with, and certainly he has had excellent results with it, and talked to other people who have as well. And so, Don, thank you so very much for coming on the line with us again.
Well, thank you very much for having me back, Dr. Stan.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about, of course, for our listeners that know that you'd actually had a bad heart attack, and they'd really told you you weren't going to be able to get back into work, into the labor. You were a roofing contractor, but you'd heard about this product. You got started taking it up there in Canada. It's produced by a pharmacist in Alberta. And before long, what was it, 6 or 8 months, why you were back on the job?
Yeah, just about there. Well, I always tried to stay working, but I was very limited by what I could do because I had lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and my ejection fraction was only at 38%, where the average person's between 65 and 70. So I had no upper body strength, but I still tried to struggle because I didn't want to give up my life. But only 8 months after taking these garlic cayenne drops, the doctors were very amazed at how my whole condition had totally reversed itself, and they gave me a clean bill of health and even photocopied my medical records and gave them to me because they were very surprised. They had never seen this before.
Well, now, of course, you'd mentioned before that this product was actually made up at the behest of the chelation society there, a chelation group there in Alberta that wanted something as an alternative to use along with the chelation. And for our listeners out there, chelation is certainly a means of trying to clean out the arteries. It takes the calcium out of the arteries. Chelation takes out various metals, lead. You can chelate for mercury or calcium, but that was the whole idea of chelation. And if you chelated a patient, sometimes the calcium, or many times the calcium, would get out of the arteries, and they would really do better, and actually sometimes they wouldn't have to have the coronary bypass or other operations. So, this was quite successful, and it's certainly not widely accepted here in the United States, although there are some people who do it, and I've talked to some people who've had excellent results. But this was up in Canada, where this is used much more readily, and they'd actually gone to the pharmacist and asked him to put together some sort of a compound that would help people. What was that all about?
Well, basically, Sam had been working with the Chelation Association doing up their EDTA formula for the intravenous drip. And they came in and said, is there some kind of natural product that he could put together that might just help those people that really couldn't afford to go in there for those regular visits?
I see.
That's how the Carnivite came about.
All right, fine. Well, so basically, why don't you tell our listeners what is in Carnivite, and then we'll get into more detail when we get back from the break.
Sure, there's cayenne, garlic, hawthorn, valerian, milk thistle, ginkgo biloba, and bilberry, all natural products.
And, of course, when you look those up, you go up on the Internet and you look up hawthorn, I was surprised that hawthorn has been used to help hearts for a long time, hasn't it?
Yes, it certainly has. It has been known to be a great cardiac tonic.
All right, we'll be back here in just a few minutes right here at Radio Liberty with Don Wiskin of Carnivite. We Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Don Wiskin. We're talking about a product that he works with. It's called Cartivitin. We're just simply saying that as I checked out the various things that were actually in this and talked to people who are experts in the field before we had Don come on regularly with us, we found out that Hawthorn had been used really for eons in many parts of the world, to help the heart. And so, and certainly cayenne, what does the cayenne pepper do as far as the heart's concerned? Certainly it's been well known and been used by herbologists and in countries where they depend much more on herbs than on proprietary medicines for help. So what does the cayenne pepper do? Do you have any idea?
Well, I know that I've ran across people over the years who found that cayenne has helped them to improve their breathing, and one man up here in Canada is known as the king of cayenne. Mixed it up with greens, and he got up to the 180 heat unit, taking about 3 tablespoons a day, and it really helped him a lot when he had emphysema. But cayenne pepper has long been regarded by naturopathic doctors as a very powerful heart and circulation tonic, because it does help to improve the blood flow, and sometimes, you know, it works rather quickly. So it is, a very potent vasodilator, and it's had great effects in doing that. Sam pretty well talks about cayenne as doing something else, because cayenne is well known for its indigestion. It helps with stomach. It helps with mental and physical exhaustion, and you know, it really does increase your energy levels.
So basically, all of the things that are in there, Sam just sort of put these together. But as a pharmacist, it actually worked in Germany for a good period of time. We've had actually Sam on of our programs in the past, and he certainly just taken what he had learned when he was working in Germany and put it together into what he felt was a tonic that might help people with heart disease. And well, at least the people there in the chelation society were very pleased with it, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. They're still very involved, and we've had a lot of interest from chelation groups across Canada, especially from, you know, the seniors who are having a hard time paying the $3,000 or $4,000 that it really takes to go through the chelation process. So it's a great alternative, because for less than a cup of coffee a day, well, the price of a cup of coffee, they can afford to have Cartivite and, you know, get the benefits from it themselves. But it really helps with a lot more than just the heart. I mean, I've been very impressed with, the detoxification part of it and helping to get the metals out of my body.
Hold that thought there right there for just a moment or two, please. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I was talking with Don Wiskin, who is certainly it helps with circulating Cartivite both here in the United States and in Canada. And we were simply talking about the cayenne. And basically, various items in there, Hawthorn, and we'd look that up on the Internet. And Hawthorn apparently has been used for hearts for a long period of time. But the idea of cayenne, of course, cayenne peppers, they're hot. Some people, use this, to improve breathing and vasodilatation. Somebody had called in and asked, well, will the cayenne burn your stomach?
Actually, no. Cayenne has been known to help rebuild stomach lining, so it's very good in that. But what most people don't realize is when I mention one of these herbs, like when I say cayenne, garlic, hawthorn, valerian, milk thistle, ginkgo biloba, and bilberry, they just think of the individual herbs and what the herbs do individually. But it's no longer about that, because when you compound these together, you get this synergistic energy that comes from the whole combination, and it really helps to change some of the properties to improve and enhance the way that it works. I've had many people call me and tell me, I've taken all of these herbs individually, and yes, they've helped for a short period of time, but they didn't have long-term benefits like the Cartivite did. So really, you know, the cayenne is an important part of it all, but it really just boils down to this combination of these 7 herbs that just seem to feed your body the nutrients that it needs to help to repair itself, because it's really about the body's ability. It's just been starved with today's diet.
All right. Well, why don't you tell our listeners, first of all, how they can get to your website, And then if they'd like to talk to you, how they can get to talk to you or your wife.
Well, they can sometimes reach both of us. You can find our website at www.heartdrop.com.
That's go ahead.
HEARTDROP.com. And we have a lot of information there, but our telephone number is 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. And we are offering a four-month special out to listeners of the Dr. Stan's Radio Liberty Show.
Okay, well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you've heard Don before and you'd like to ask him any questions, this is an ideal time to do it. We've actually talked to Sam, who's the pharmacist. Certainly he seems to be really sold on the effectiveness of this, and he's still actually working as a pharmacist there in Alberta, isn't he? And then does he constitute all of this for you?
He makes this all for us, and then he tests it all to make sure that the frequencies of the herbs in there are the highest possible frequencies that we can get, because he wants this product to work for people, and at the same time he wants to keep it as affordable as possible. And, that is his goal. He's had this goal most of his life. And when he came to North America and found out that we were so far behind the European countries when it came to what we were doing, we weren't working with any natural products at all to speak of. And he was, he really fought quite a battle in Alberta to do this. And, because he ran a pharmacy that had more natural products in it than pharmaceutical drugs. And he even lectures at the university there about natural products. He helped to put the curriculum together so that pharmacists and doctors could study natural medicines more and understand why and how these things can work well with your pharmaceutical drugs if you're already taking pills for certain ailments.
Well, I, of course, graduated from the University of California, which had been a homeopathic hospital, and the old Hahnemann Hospital was the original medical school. But when the drug companies came in, they began putting pressure on the medical schools to get away from homeopathy and the use of herbs and other things. And you had to have all these pharmaceutical drugs. Now some drugs are really amazing. But an awful lot of drugs really are not. In fact, they're copycats of other things, and a tremendous amount of money is spent simply on marketing products, some of which are very, very dangerous, and many of it, like certainly Vioxx and Celebrex and these others, actually increase the incidence of heart disease significantly, and they knew that when they put them on the market, but they were great. I mean, they were making profits. These drug companies were making profits, specifically Merck and Pfizer. They were really unconscionable. And, of course, they were putting about 20% of it out simply in marketing. 20% of everything they got went into marketing. They put more money into marketing than they put into research. An incredible thing. And this is really why I think it's so important. We think about getting back to some of the old remedies that have been around for a long period of time. Over in Europe, For instance, they refuse to allow water fluoridation. There's hardly any of the communities over there water fluoridated because they know the terrible danger of poisoning the people. Over in Europe, for instance, in Sweden, the socialized medicine and dentistry, they won't allow mercury fillings to be put in. We call them silver fillings here. The truth is they're 50% mercury, and they do put off mercury. They will not allow that in many countries in Europe. But here in America, why, of course, there's an entirely different motive. And, of course, it isn't necessarily your health. So I think that it's important to take advantage of the people who really have had an opportunity to study traditional medicine before we got onto the allopathic type of medicine we have today. And I'll have to admit that since I left organized medicine and began studying the lessons of the past, I've learned that there are a lot of products that have been around that have been very, very beneficial, and unfortunately, the modern-day doctors don't hear about them. All they hear about, of course, are the very, very expensive medications that are really, and the government is really in favor of protecting our health. They won't let us buy the products that are manufactured in the United States and shipped to Canada, where they sold at a third the price. We can't buy them in Canada. We have to buy them here. And why? Well, my goodness, they may not be as good once they've gone across the border. So, believe me, there are a lot of scams out there. The stock that has done best in the United States, the group of stocks, of any stocks at all, are the drug company stocks. If you bought them, you made a fortune, but at whose expense? Well, Don, you know, as you, of course, how long have you actually been involved in marketing Cardamyte?
I've been 5.5 years on the radio talking to people and doing my best to get across a very simple message of natural health. And it sometimes is a battle, Dr. Stan. As you know, a lot of people are very strong believers in, you know, what the white coat can do for them. In my case, doctors did save my life. I mean, but I always look at it as that was reactive medicine. They were reacting to a situation that should have been dealt with years before, but unfortunately, I just went about eating the Western diet, having the fast foods, breathing the air, doing all the things that it takes just to be a normal North American citizen. And it's those things right there that pretty well toxified my body and almost sealed my fate, because the doctors did tell my wife to go home that night and prepare for the worst.
All right, fine. And, of course, you've actually had the heart attack. You left the hospital. You had to go back again. But you did get through this. And now, of course, 7 years later, why, you're in really pretty good shape, aren't you?
Oh, I believe so. I'm 50 years old now. I know that sounds very young to you, and it is. I still feel very young. I feel more like 40 now than I felt when I was 40. And I really contribute that to the benefits of Cardamyte and the way that it's cleaned out my body and allowed me to have the energy of the youth back and allowed my body the food that it needed to repair all this damage that's done inside of me and keep me going and making me feel very, very good about being alive.
Well, I tell you, one of the worst things is what's going on in America today. Heart disease has certainly been increasing. Of course, cancer recently surpassed. Heart disease is in the last couple of years, is the major killer here in the United States. Why are these things increasing? Why is heart disease increasing? Why do we have so much more heart disease in the United States than they have in other countries of the world? And it's a rhetorical question. The answer, well, that's far beyond what we're going to be able to discuss this evening. But you're going to have to look after your own heart. You're going to have to watch your diet. But there are other things you can do. And certainly, Cardamyte seems to be an excellent, what do you call it, rather a tonic? Would that be the way you'd describe it? Because,
well,
of course, you're limited in what you can say by the Federal Drug Administration.
Absolutely. But we do have it in two forms. In the tincture, 15 drops 3 times a day underneath your tongue, that is the tonic. But because some people are so used to fresh-smelling things that they didn't like the smell of these herbs, so I convinced Sam to try and make it into capsules, and he wasn't sure that he could get the frequencies as high as he wanted when he first started, but he did manage to accomplish that, and we've had people who've taken the capsules, which is taken 3 times a day with food, and usually within 6 months, they're right on par with what they would have been on the tinctures, so Sam was very, very fortunate in being able to put together the capsules, because we found that the capsules are a lot more widely accepted. People don't mind just taking a pill, washing it down, and having their meal. That's quite simple. It's very accepted. But the tincture, well, for those who really enjoy it, it's underneath the tongue, right into your bloodstream right away, and it's a very pleasant taste once people get comfortable with the little spiciness of it.
Well, of course, the thing is the old method of taking C-nitroglycerin, you put it under your tongue, because, of course, the tissues there, the mucosa of the mouth, are very, very permeable, and the things are absorbed right into the system there. And it was years ago why you used tinctures and put it under your tongue. We don't do that much anymore. Everybody wants to take a capsule or a pill. You know, they're much easier. To get down, it's a little bit of trouble to use the tincture, but do you have more people using the tincture than the capsule, or what?
No, they're almost about even.
All right.
The capsules and the tincture are pretty well on the same level, and some people just enjoy the tincture better. Some people try the tincture first, and then they order the capsules, or some, you know, buy the tincture and stay right on it.
All right, fine. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And when we get back, if you have a call or question for Don, why, this is the time to ask him. He'll be with us just a little longer here. So he knows a lot more about this than just about anybody else. He's been actually helping people to get started on this for Well, I guess the better part of certainly the last 7 years. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Don Wiskin. He's talking about the Cartivite, which is actually manufactured up there in Canada by Sam, who's a pharmacist in Alberta, and really very, very knowledgeable. We've had the opportunity of talking to him on a couple of occasions, and we'll have to get him on again one of these days, Don.
Yeah, I tried to have him on tonight, but he's very active with the Lions Club, and they've got some big events going on this week, so he said... to, you know, say he was sorry that he couldn't make it with us this evening, because I'd like to have him back on again, hopefully on the next time we're on, because it is about his knowledge. And, you know, really what he does is every couple of years he goes back to Germany and meets with his colleagues, and he keeps an up-to-date German compendium on all of the drugs that they've got over there. He's always going through it and showing me, of course it's written in German, but he's showing me all of these things and telling me how these herbs work like this and the herbs work like that, and how, you know, he's made this and this has worked. And he's, you know, it's sometimes it's really funny how simple something can be, and how simple something, you know, like how something like Cartivite, which is very simple, how it can work without any real rhyme or reason. But we don't really need to worry about it, because, you know, if we're adding the nutrients and our body's doing what it's supposed to do, then, you know, the Cartivite has done its job. So we don't have to really understand it, just be able to take it. And, you know, nowadays with the time that we don't have, people don't have the time to learn about a lot of these things. But usually, I mean, like myself, when I got involved in this, I got involved because something happened to me. Something made me stop and say, whoa, my life is not heading in the right direction. My health is not heading in the right direction. I need to do something about this. I had to take the responsibility for my own health, because, you know, my doctor, my GP, was very good at working with me, and she was very interested in seeing me get better, but she had her hands tied by what she could do. And when she saw what had happened, you know, the first thing she did was put her parents on it, because she loved her parents and wanted them to be around and as healthy as long as possible. Now, my cardiologist, who is a little more trained and a specialist, he sure had a file on what I was giving him and telling him all about it, but he really didn't have much interest in it, because there was nothing there for him. I mean, if he was able to help people not have to use him very often, he'd be out of a job, wouldn't he?
Well, let's hope that that's what the real purpose of medicine is, to get people better. And certainly, at least when I was practicing, and I think most doctors really want to help their patients. But, you know, Don, you have to understand that, you know, if this is not being pushed at the major medical meetings, if it's not being written up in the major publications, doctors are a little hesitant to recommend something just because it works.
Yes. You know, on my website, I have a link to a Dr. Matson. He's a naturopathic doctor, and he's been very, very amazed about our stuff. Even in his last book, he wrote us up as Heart Drops and mentioned the benefits. On my links page on heartdrop.com, you can link to Dr. Matson's site, and on his June 2003 monthly update, he talks about how the Cartivite helped one of his patients. He talked about the benefits of the milk thistle. I've got a one-minute clip, if you've got a minute that we can listen to what he had to say about Cartivite.
Well, I tell you what, why don't we just wait until we get back. We've got about 20 seconds here, and then we'll let you go ahead and play that one-minute clip. And again, that website is www.heartdrop.com. That's www.heartdrop.com. And, of course, the telephone number is 877-928-8822. Well, Don, our guest is Don Wiskin, and he's talking about Cartivite. Don, do you want to go ahead and play that clip? Who is this doctor? He's a naturopath?
Dr. John, J-O-N-N, Matson, M-A-T-S-E-N. He is a naturopath doctor. He was very unhealthy himself. He had the mercury fillings, and then he got the nickel braces, and in his early 20s, he was starting to experience the beginning of Berger's disease. So instead of, you know, continuing partying on, he went and became a herbalist, and then he worked with a lot of natural, I'm going to call them healers for lack of a better word, and then he went ahead and became a naturopathic doctor and studied under some of the top doctors, including Dr. Harold Dick in Spokane, Washington, who's got quite a reputation for helping people.
Why don't you go ahead and play that clip that you have?
Okay, here we go.
Her program, and we use, you know, herbal formulas like Cardivite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, you know, a few months later, we know we're doing something right. The biochemistry that we're using in the book is just trying to explain the results that we're getting.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be perfect, but, you know, in our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. I mean, this basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we've seen. Keep working on that product. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on.
Okay, fine.
We'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well. If you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. You've got to understand that your body is programmed to heal, and you got to make it work that way and heal yourself. Outside help isn't going to solve all your problems.
Okay, let's go to Don, who's calling us from Missouri. Hi, Don. How are you doing?
Good evening. I'm doing just fine, Dr. Montes.
I have a question at all.
Yes, I do. With Cardivite, it's a chelating agent, right?
Well, really, I don't think you could call it necessarily a chelating agent. Would you call it a chelating agent, or would you, Don?
Well, it does have some chelating abilities. The sulfur content of the garlic helps to remove a lot of the heavy metals.
I see. Well, okay, since I thought it was a chelating agent, I was going to ask if it is necessary to augment Cardivite with other minerals.
Well, see, that is the benefit of the Cardivite versus the... versus the EDTA formula, is you don't have to, because we're not stripping anything out of the inside of your arteries with the intravenous drip. And so what Cardivite is doing is also feeding your body food that it needs at the same time. So it's filled with the minerals, trace minerals and nutrients that we need, and a lot of different vitamins, and it covers quite a large spectrum in what it does.
And I think the thing is that the EDTA, for our listeners out there, is what you use with chelation, and then to pull all the minerals out of it, really. Of course, it'll pull, not simply calcium, but other heavy metals and other things out of the system. Okay, anything else you wanted to ask, Don?
Yes, you touched on it there with the heavy metals. Is there a sequence of the side effects that disappear, such as... cholesterol being reduced in the arteries and veins, and then maybe calcification of the walls of the arteries and veins being improved secondarily, and then heavy metals last, or does it all happen at once?
It all begins in the complete ongoing cycle. I always like to say that the cholesterol buildup is basically a Band-Aid because of the damage, and our body is able to repair that damage if it's given the right nutrients. So once we start adding Cardivite with the nutrients that it needs, it's the food that your body needs to go ahead and release that Band-Aid. But at the same time that it's doing that, the milk thistle is trying to regenerate your liver's ability to handle the toxins, and the sulfur contents of the garlic are working a way to remove the heavy metals. And as Dr. Mattson said in our little clip there, it also...
We were talking about certainly the artery, the fact that Dr. Mattson had talked about how, you know, this would help, you know, certainly facilitate the healing of the process.
Well, he was referring also to killing off the yeast overgrowth because of garlic's abilities to kill microorganisms and bacteria.
Of course, garlic is one of the old-fashioned antibiotics used long before we had the conventional ones. And not that the conventional ones aren't really wonderful, because I came into medicine, just as the antibiotics were coming on, and one time you used to have whole wards full of people with chronic osteomyelitis. You just don't see that hardly anymore. Hey, Don, anything else from Don from Missouri? Anything else you want to ask?
That's all. Thank you very much.
God bless. And I think that basically they're not necessarily based upon. Clinical studies, but really more or less on serendipity and the patient's response. Wouldn't that be a fairly good explanation?
At this moment, yes, but there has been lots of studies done on the herbs individually that have proven that they do work. So put this together in this combination, we've been very fortunate.
Well, let's go ahead and get that telephone number off one more time.
1-877-928-8255. 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822.
This is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this evening for a few more minutes will be Don Wiskin. We're talking about Cartavite, and of course the website is www.heartdrop.com. And of course, what would they find if they get up on your website, Don?
They'll find a basic explanation of all of the herbs that we have in there. They'll find some testimonials from people that have been taking our products. They'll find some links to other health-related sites that can help a lot, and even a link to your site. So there's plenty of information there, but as you've said numerous times, we do try and fly beneath the radar, and we don't make any real claims on there, but at the same time, we try and give you enough information to encourage you to at least call and try the four-month special and just see what you've noticed during those first 4 months of taking Cartavite.
And you actually say that it really takes 4 months before you can be absolutely certain, because some people are better at 1 month and some people at two, but you know, you feel that most people seem to be fairly happy at 4 months. Does that be a fair response?
Well, that's where they really start to notice the improved energy, and they just, there's something different about the way they feel, and they realize it. Sometimes in the first month or two, you really don't notice something because your body has been so hungry for these nutrients, it uses it up rather quickly. But as you keep administering it three times a day, every day, you start to build up what you need in your body, and the work that it's doing is very evident. Usually in 6 months, doctors are saying, I don't care what you're doing, keep doing it, you're doing well.
And, of course, that's the biggest thing. I think that, you know, I know that some of our patients, some of the people that listen to our program would take various things, and I know we have one. And the doctor says, I don't know what you're doing, but please keep on doing that, because whatever it is, it's something that I couldn't do. And he's as tickled as he can be. And, of course, the family isn't about to tell him what they're doing. And so I think that really we have to be responsible for our own health. The doctor is there. He wants to help it. Unfortunately, because of the way things are being pushed today, and of course the influence that the drug companies have on the practice of medicine, why, the doctor is really not getting a lot of information. Perhaps you can get informed out there in the listening audience, and certainly let them know. Don, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. Let's get out that telephone number and the website just one more time.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stan. It's heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com. And our phone number is 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. And ask about the four-month special from the listeners of Dr. Stan.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you so very much. We'll be talking to you again next month.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we're just going to have an open lines for the rest of this half hour, and then, of course, we're going to have Christy Diamond with us next month, next hour, talking about mercury and really the disastrous effects of dental fillings and, of course, of the mercury they have in the vaccines. And, of course, what we're doing is getting people overloaded with one of the most toxic substances in the world. And the government knows exactly what's going on. I don't mean that the whole government, but there are a few wicked people in the government who are following along with Bertrand Russell's statement by diet, injections, and injunctions. We'll be able to mold the minds of the children so that they will have the attitudes that the state would have them have. And, of course, you really don't want very much smart people in an authoritarian state. If you read Bertrand Russell's writing, and, of course, we'll be glad to send you the pages out of his book, The Impact of Science on Society, written in 1953, where he actually talks about how, you know, the Nazis, well, of course, they committed an awful lot of atrocities, but this is probably, had they been successful, this is the sort of thing they would do with selective breeding, and really how this is really how great this would be. And certainly we want, of course, to breed people for some for intelligence and some for physical strength. But we want, of course, all these people to be docile. And then, of course, we will have the elite. And there will be almost an entirely different relationship, almost like they were different species of human beings. And of course, eventually, a revolt of the plebs against the ruling elite would be like having sheep revolt against the eating of mutton. And then he goes on to talk about the importance of having a black plague sweep the world every generation to kill off as many people. He said war wasn't a very good means of killing off people. Of course, we had to breed a certain number of people to use as cannon fodder. These are his words, not mine. And if you'd like to read those pages, of course, we have them in our hidden agenda, the syllabus. But if you'd like just those one specific pages, I think they're so important that you read them, that you see them. That you know that this is really what was said, that there really are people who look at the world entirely differently than you and I do. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, at 464-8295. And there are a lot of fascinating things that are going on today that I think foretell some very difficult times lying ahead. And certainly, if we look and see the president's polls, his approval rating as far as Iraq goes is somewhere between 38% and 42%. Now, you know, shortly after the attack on Iraq, why, he had 75% ratings. But certainly the favor, the people in favor of the way this thing is being handled has actually fallen and fallen dramatically. And as you know, why, the Iraqi parliament was supposed to have come up, I believe it was today, with a final constitution. And according to the rules that we laid down, because believe me, we laid down the rules because we did everything we could to prevent a logical solution to what's going on over there. Let me give you a little of the background of how Iraq came about and why the policies that we're trying to force down the parliament, the representatives of the people, will not work. Iraq did not exist as a nation until after the First World War. And at that time, of course, the Ottoman Empire would come in on the side of the Germans and Austro-Hungarian Empire. And as a result of the First World War, why, the Ottoman Empire was destroyed. The First World War destroyed the German Empire. It destroyed the Austro-Hungarian Empire. It destroyed the Russian Empire. It destroyed the Turkish or the Ottoman Empire. And so there were three provinces that were made up of people who were entirely different. The Kurds in the north, and then you had the Sunnis in the center, and you had the Shias in the south, and each group had an entirely different outlook. They had actually much different backgrounds, even some different racial backgrounds as far as the Kurds. And although they were Muslim, they felt they were entirely different, a different breed than the others. And what the British did was to create the nation of Iraq with these three warring groups, so they could produce instability there. Because if you had an unstable Middle East, why, then Great Britain would be able to play one group against the other. And that's exactly what they did between the First World War and the Second World War. The British sent an expeditionary force in, I believe, 1917 or 1918, and they had nothing but problems. The first time they were actually forced out and forced to leave, and then they came back and slaughtered so many people that they destroyed all the resistance, and they established a government there. But the only way to keep these three warring groups together was to have a dictator, a ruthless tyrant. And of course, it was a series of ruthless tyrants. And most people do not understand that back in the 1950s, late 1950s, Saddam Hussein was working for the Central Intelligence Agency. And if you have your Google search on your computer, you just type in Saddam Hussein, CIA, 1958 or something like that. He was hired by the CIA as an assassin at that time. He really was very reluctant to kill people, but he was taught to kill. And eventually he became a very, very ruthless tyrant. We helped him to assume power. And, of course, in 1979, why, he seized power and became the dictator of Iraq. Now, the only way you can keep these three warring groups, you know, from killing one another is to have a ruthless dictator. And, of course, he would then, of course, using a secret police and, terrible punishment and torture and things like that, he was to keep people in line. And then, of course, on the other hand, why, they subsidized food for the people, they subsidized gasoline. And if you didn't object to what the government was doing, why, of course, you could live and get along fairly well. If you objected to the government, why, of course, they would come after you with claws and fangs. No, what most people in America don't ever stop and think is that the United States financed and supported the wicked Saddam Hussein all during the 1980s. And certainly right up until the latter part of 1990, why, we backed him. We actually, and I've talked to members of the Special Forces who were over there in Iraq during the Iraq-Iranian War, and we were helping them to use the poison gas that was killing the Iranians in violation of every law of humanity. All laws outlaw the use of poison gas, and yet we had Special Forces there helping Saddam use, you know, the poison gas to kill hundreds of thousands of Iranians. Not only that, but Saddam used the poison gas on his own people in Kurdistan when they rose up against him, and we supported him after that. In fact, it was during the latter part of the 1980s when we lent Saddam Hussein some $5 billion. We have an article from the New York Times, we still have it, where there's some little bank in the southern part of the United States lent Saddam Hussein $5 billion. And the bank manager was called up for trial, and the judge said, who told you to lend Saddam Hussein $5 billion? You've just got a small bank in the southern part of the United States. You don't lend $5 billion. And the man, obviously afraid for his life and the life of his family, kept insisting it was all his idea. And the judge said, I don't believe you. And, you know, it was a fascinating article. Of course, we're looking back probably about 1988-89. This is one reason why I keep all of these articles, because they give you insights, and you'll see these articles once or twice, then totally censored and never seen again. We also gave Saddam Hussein $5 billion in agricultural credits from our government, which then he could sell the agricultural products and make more money to buy the weapons in preparation for the first Gulf War. Now, the reason that Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait was the fact that they were actually slant drilling into his land, or land that was contested, between Kuwait and Iraq. And this was an area that nobody was supposed to be drilling in, and they were stealing his oil. And so we asked the American the American ambassador, a woman named April Gillespie, if it would be all right if he invaded Kuwait. And she told him, go ahead, in essence. And if you doubt that, we have a great article out of the Washington Post called When an Ally Becomes an Enemy. And it tells you everything that I've told you. It doesn't tell you about the judge. That's a different article, but we'd be glad to provide that for anybody who wants to. The judge who said to the bank manager, I don't believe you. You're not telling the truth. You didn't lend five. Somebody told you to lend $5 billion to Saddam Hussein. And could you imagine the manager of your local bank lending somebody $5 billion? Do you honestly believe that happened? Like so many of the things that happened today, like the magic passports that just fluttered down out of the World Trade Center, complete with a picture of one of the people who was on that plane. How did that happen? Because if it didn't happen, simply as an act of God or Allah or whatever, why it meant that the CIA or somebody in the intelligence agency planted the passport, and they knew who was going to be on that plane. They knew exactly who was going to be on that plane. And the same thing happened over in Pennsylvania, where they also found a passport. It's interesting how those things happened, and, well, there's so many similarities between the World Trade Center bombing and the bombing over in London on July 7th of this year. But in both instances, there were advanced knowledge. Both instances, intelligence agencies had told Great Britain, actually the Pakistani intelligence agencies had told Great Britain the attack was coming, and here, why, the United States, the Mossad, the German intelligence, the Russian intelligence, Morocco, Jordan, I think even Pakistan, and the Taliban had told the United States that there was going to be an attack on the United States, but our intelligence agencies were 99% sure it was going to be elsewhere. Why would they do that when the April 6th presidential daily briefing said planning an attack in the United States, hijacking planes, scouting buildings in New York City? And if you haven't read that presidential daily briefing of August the 6th of 2001, we have a copy. We'll be glad to send it to you. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a copy of that article out of the Washington Post, When an Enemy Becomes an Ally, telling about how your government financed this wicked Saddam Hussein, who killed people and tortured people, and I have no question that he did that sort of thing. Well, anyway, we'll be glad to send you a copy of these articles. You need to have the documentation to know what we're telling you is actually true. Then, of course, let's look and see what's going on now. Now, you have your three groups over there in Iraq. And what the United States government said was, we want you to have a democracy. And we want you to draw up a constitution. But you have to get a two-thirds majority to pass the constitution, knowing full well that there was no way to get a two-thirds majority. Why? Because the Shias make up about 60%, and the Kurds make up probably about 20%, and the Sunnis make up 20%. So if the Sunnis and the Kurds wouldn't go along with the constitution, they couldn't get a two-thirds majority, and we knew that. Why? Because we don't want stability. If there was stability in Iraq, how could we possibly justify keeping our troops there? If you have not yet read my latest newsletter, and actually it's just be going out tomorrow, I think, or the next day, that is the July newsletter, I tell you why we really went into Iraq. We did not go into Iraq because we wanted the oil, although the oil would be certainly a benefit for us to be able to control that oil, and certainly not just the United States. We plan to divide it up among our allies, and if you doubt that, you need to read Paul O'Neill's book, The Price of Loyalty, when Paul O'Neill was the Secretary of the Treasury. His book is very revealing, and I believe it's page 96, although don't hold me to that. If you want the page, we can send it to you, where Paul O'Neill tells about going to National Security Council meetings 6 months before the September 11th attack. And there was Paul Wolfowitz and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld asking how we were going to get the American people to go along with a preemptive strike on Iraq. This was 6 or 7 months before 9/11. How are we going to get the American people to go along with a preemptive strike? And that he pointed out that they had already had the charts planning on how they were going to divide up the oil of Iraq. This is 6 to 7 months before the 9/11 attack. So oil was an interest, but that wasn't the major reason we went in. And it had nothing to do necessarily with helping Israel. In fact, we're doing everything we can to destabilize Israel and what's happening over there with having to pull their troops out of the Gaza is creating tremendous unrest in Israel, and the nation there is split right down the middle on that. Even half the army doesn't believe in it, and many of the soldiers, etc., are weeping as they're being forced, make these settlers, who many of them have been there 30 years, to give up their homes and give up their greenhouses and give up their farms and move back, as impoverished, really. Nomads move back into Israel proper. How would you feel if the government said, we're going to take away your home, you've lived here for 40 years, but you're going to have to leave, we've decided to do something else with your property? Well, that's happening in Israel today. So if you really think that the Zionists control the American government, they're not doing a very good job. Why would they make such demands on the American government? Because we are the major force forcing Israel to do exactly what they're doing, and that is giving up even more of the land that they had won in military activity. So, of course, it would sort of be like us giving New York back to the Indians, and they're saying, if you don't give it back to us, we're going to go on the war path, and fine, we'll give you that. We'll give you land for peace. We'll give you New York, and well, we could give them Washington, D.C. That might not be too much of a loss. Anyway, we did not go there, certainly, for the oil. We did not go there to protect Israel. Some people say we went into Iraq because we wanted to protect the American dollar, because Saddam was threatening to actually denominate his oil sales in euros rather than in dollars and destroy the reserve capacity of our currency. And I think all of these are factors, but none of them are the real factor we're there. You'll want to read my newsletter. It's the July newsletter. It will be posted on the web probably in the next 3 or 4 days. And those of you who subscribe to our newsletter will be sending that out, I think, on Tuesday or Wednesday. And then, of course, we do hope that if you'd like to get a free copy of the newsletter, why, of course, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Why are we really there? Well, of course, it all has to do with Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was the National Security Advisor under President Carter, who toppled the Shah of Iran and brought the Ayatollah to power, who precipitated the Afghan War in December of 1979. And he knew exactly what he was doing. He was planning to give an excuse to create this whole Islamic terrorist movement. But what was the real reason? Why, of course, so America could have troops permanently stationed in the Middle East. That's what it's really all about. You need to read Brzezinski's book. It's called The Grand Chessboard, and we quote that from that extensively in our latest newsletter. I hope you'll get it. I hope you'll read it. I hope you'll contemplate on it. And understanding that the 100,000 Iraqi civilians, probably many more than that by now, who have died for no other reason, no real reason, that the American boys who are over there were not fighting for America. We're fighting for the one world government. We're fighting for those who have a different dream of what the world should be and want an American empire, a new world order, a one world religion. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment, and we'll take a Rogers call, and then, of course, we'll be back here in just a few minutes with Christy Diamond talking about the fact that they're poisoning the American people. They're poisoning with mercury fillings. They're poisoning with vaccinations. They're poisoning with mercury in the air and in the water. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Roger, hi, how are you doing?
Yes, thanks, Dr. Smith. Hey, had you heard about, not this yesterday's, but the previous week's Sunday morning Talking Heads, Tim Russert, Meet the Depressed or whatever? He had on both David Kirby, that would be the author of Evidence of Harm, Mercury in Vaccines and the Autism Epidemic.
I heard that David Kirby did quite well. What was your thought of the program?
Quite,
I didn't see it. But.
Yeah, quite well indeed. And he was, of course, opposed by Dr. Harvey Fineberg, President, Institute of Medicine. And Fineberg, uniformly the best of the study, showed no association between vaccines and autism. Kirby comes back. Those studies range from seriously flawed to hopelessly flawed. The epidemiological data alone was considered, and that was not sufficient because they ignored biological and clinical data, etc. I could go on there. But it was, and so they're a mere 2 years behind Dr. Stan and Radio Liberty, I guess, right?
Okay, well, fine. Thanks. Anything else?
Yeah, that was all. I just wanted to make sure you knew about that.
Yeah, I did. Thanks so much. And let's go to Mike calling in from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, Stan, real quick, just a slightly different idea about why we went to Iraq. I believe that Babylon is holy ground to our wonderful Illuminati here in the States, and they want it. That's it.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Well, of course, all I can do is simply quote what Zygmunt Brzezinski says. And Zygmunt Brzezinski, for those of you who don't know, Zygmunt Brzezinski was the wrote a book called Between Two Ages, American the Technotronic Age. We talked about how wonderful Marxism was and how America's sovereignty was going to have to be given up and how we were going to have a one-world government and all of these traitorous things. And in fact, David Rockefeller read the book and was so impressed by it, he hired Zygmunt Brzezinski to form the Trilateral Commission. Now, the Trilateral Commission was to be made up of the leaders of the world, at least the leaders of the United States and of Europe and of Asia. And so the Trilateral Commission had a logo. It is not simply by coincidence that the logo was three intertwining sixes. If you read Marilyn Ferguson's book, and incidentally I got an email from Marilyn Ferguson just the other day, and we hope that we can get her on our program here. I'd love to have an opportunity to interview her. You know what, so you can hear her, and I think she's a very nice person. I think she's wrong, but I think she's a very nice person. I'd like to hear what she has to say, but if you read her book, The Aquarian Conspiracy, she will tell you about Zygmunt Brzezinski. And I think that his own words, of course, let you know his loyalty is not to the United States, but to America dominating the world and bringing about a new world order and a new world religion. You see, there are people who have a different vision of the world. And if you don't believe in God, then man is going to have to create a new world. And I think that's exactly where we are headed today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and certainly this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there in the listening audience, we do hope that many of you will help us and give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Don Wiskin does support Radio Liberty. We have him on. We think he has an interesting story to tell. But we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family as we expand our coverage. We're actually picking up 18 new stations. It will be on next week during drive time in the morning and bringing rebroadcasts of these evening programs. And certainly we are going to have a tremendous outreach all across America, but quite frankly, it's quite an undertaking. And then, of course, we hope to syndicate both our afternoon and our evening programs, and we have people who volunteer to try to get stations to pull us down. But, of course, we have to get the satellite time arranged for. So we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like either of the articles we talked about the Washington Post article about when an ally becomes an enemy, or, of course, the presidential daily briefing, and we got that, of course, for the 911 commission where they actually published it. It's amazing to realize that they knew the attack was coming. I mean, the article that the president got on the 6th of April, pardon me, the 6th of August, said, Bin Laden plans attack on America, the words of that effect. They knew exactly what was going to happen, and they did nothing to stop it. If they'd known an attack was coming, why didn't they put marshals on the planes? Why didn't they warn the American people? As now they warn us just at the slightest little thing, and, you know, they're always warning us and going from yellow to orange to red or alert. Well, they knew the attack was coming. Why didn't they arm the pilots? Why didn't they warn the stewardesses? Why did they put out a directive that no pilot could carry a weapon on board a plane? They did that just 2 months before the 911 attack, according to the head of the Airline Pilots Association, who I've talked to, and we have his interviews. We'd be glad to get those for you. We actually know that they actually lowered the situation so it made it easier for terrorists to get on board. At the very morning of 911, nine of the terrorists were stopped, and then they were allowed to get on the plane. They knew who the terrorists were ahead of time. They were tracking Muhammad Atta. How can we say that? Well, Congressman Kirk Weldon came out with that material, that there was something called Able Danger. It was an American military intelligence unit that was tracking this, I think, four or five of the hijackers. But you see, we can't let the American people know that. Because think of the implications. That would mean we allowed the attack to happen so we could go to war with Iraq. Could that really happen? Could anything be that evil? Well, we have three pamphlets, actually. They're called 911 Foreknowledge. They're my letters, and we put them into pamphlet form. They're available if you'd like to know more about them. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's three pamphlets on 911 Foreknowledge. We want you, of course, to get them, to read them, and then, of course, get them to your friends. If you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, which is the July newsletter, which tells you why we really went to war, and, of course, with Iraq, and, of course, we simply quote from Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was certainly the founder of the Trilateral Commission, longtime member of the Council on Foreign Relations, very close to David Rockefeller, who was very close to the occult hierarchy that controls our nation. In fact, David was even named in our July newsletter. If you haven't read that, you really should. They're all up on our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you of the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us on the evening, on the line now, Christy Diamond. And Christy has put together a video. It's called Uninformed Consent. It goes into the background of Mercury. And this is really one of the most incredible stories. You know, today in America, one in every six American children has either a neurodevelopmental abnormality or a behavioral abnormality. It was 25 years ago. One in 10,000 American children was autistic. Today it's one in about 166. And since the disease is probably far more, I think it's about five times more frequent in boys and girls, so it's about 1 in 50 or 1 in 60 boys, American boys in this country today, is autistic. And, of course, there's a spectrum. It goes from autism to Asperger's disease, which is high-functioning autism, and then it gets into learning disabilities, reading disabilities, writing disabilities, speaking disabilities. And today, 1 in 6 American children either has a neurodevelopmental abnormality or of course, has a behavioral abnormality, and we've destroyed a whole generation of our children. Because, you see, so many of the children, they may not actually, show the symptoms of autism now, but their brains are loaded with mercury because we've given them toxic doses, tremendous toxic doses in the vaccine shots. And then, of course, but they don't certainly show signs of mercury intoxication yet. And then we put in the mercury fillings. And then, of course, we feed them tuna fish, which is loaded with mercury. And then, of course, they breathe the air that comes from coal-burning generating plants, power-generating plants. And, of course, there's mercury there. And we are surrounded by mercury, and you could probably get by with it if they hadn't loaded you down with massive doses in the vaccines. And we're going to lose a whole generation of our people. And their minds will be affected. Of course, it lowers the IQ. They know exactly what they're doing. You see, you don't want a lot of smart people if you're going to have an authoritarian society. Nothing could be that evil, you're going to say. But could it? Christy's on the front lines of this battle. Christy, what are your thoughts about what I've just been saying?
Well, I would say that it's pretty sinister.
It really is.
And I was raised in a good Republican family.
All right. Well, tell us, how did you get involved in this battle?
Well, I was ill, and I went about trying to find out why I was ill. And in doing so, I came across some information about mercury and amalgam fillings, and that's where I got my primary exposure. And I had them removed. They weren't removed properly, and I had a massive exposure. And over a period, over a decade, I finally got most of my dental work cleared up. In fact, I'm still working on it today and probably will continue to do so for the rest of my life because of the massive exposure that I received.
Well, I actually had some mercury fillings taken out today, and the doctor did everything right. He's an expert on it. But even still, when he took out the dental dam, I suddenly got tremendous tachycardia, a tremendous response, even from the very, very small amount of mercury that was still in my mouth that had not been removed. You know, you certainly don't want to get to somebody who's not trained to have your mercury fillings taken out. But let me tell you that they are constantly venting into your system, and there's a very definite relationship between neurodevelopmental abnormalities both in children and in adults. We'll be back in just a moment here. Okay, Christy. Well, you know, of course, most Americans really believe that those fillings that we get from the dentist are silver fillings. That's what they tell us. It's interesting how words are used to conceal truth. Do you want to pick up this story?
That's right. And, you know, just to give your listeners some perspective on this, the amount of mercury that's in that filling is about the same amount of mercury that you'd find in a thermometer. And that's also, it's about half a gram, it's about the same amount of mercury that would close down a 10-acre lake from swimming, from fishing, from any kind of human exposure or contact. That's pretty mind-boggling, I'd say.
But you see, the average individual can't believe that because they know that their dentist wouldn't put anything in their mouth that was going to harm them, was going to poison them, was going to lead to all sorts of toxic effects, and certainly Alzheimer's disease. When they got older, at least a certain number of people would get these neurodevelopmental abnormalities, the neurodegenerative diseases from the mercury in their fillings. But most people think that those fillings are stable, and they don't bet it. And they're there. Once they're there, they don't give off mercury vapors, do they?
Well, of course they do. And the dentists are the most toxic profession on the face of the earth. Think about it. They've been exposed to mercury every single day of their workday in egregious amounts. It's a very effective neurotoxin. It dumbs down the population so they can't think. And dentists can't think. It's very hard to get them to understand anything new. They have the highest suicide rate, they have the highest alcoholism, they have the highest drug addiction on the globe of any profession there is. And dental hygienists who are working with them have the highest reproductive dysfunction as well in their profession.
And that means they just can't conceive children. If they have them, they miscarriage. And this is well known, but...
Or endometriosis, no. Or menstrual problems, or any kind of hormonal imbalance, which, by the way, there have been some scientists who have found that this mercury that likes to attach to just about anything in your body as far as cell sites, oxygen cell sites on your red blood cells or anything, they've discovered that it likes to attach to testosterone. And when it attaches to testosterone, that testosterone seems to be retained in the body. Now, that's very interesting because of what we're seeing out in the population. You know that autism and ADD is primarily a male affliction, and you were naming off some stats. The stats I heard were autism was 27 boys to one girl. It's something that is primarily what we see in the neurodevelopmental ADD.
Hold that thought there. We'll be back in just a moment. For 60 seconds. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess. It's Christy Diamond. And so Christy was basically saying that the mercury, of course, is so toxic. The one profession that is constantly exposed to mercury are the dentists, and that they have the highest incidence of suicide. Why? Because of the toxicity on their brains. I remember, of course, one of my dentists telling me that, that the dentists had one of the highest rates of suicide of any profession. Shortly before he himself committed suicide. So, and then of course the dental technicians who work with the dentist have a very, very high rate as far as miscarriages, and they can't get pregnant or carry it through to term. So the toxic fumes are there, but nobody is telling the dentist about that. They're told, you just have to be so careful. You take out those dental fillings, that's toxic material, they can't even flush it down the drain. But there's nothing to worry about when you put them in people's mouth. You would think the dentist might be smart enough to realize that it's so toxic you can't put it down the drain. Is it really safe to be putting in people's mouths?
Of course not. These dentists believe their trade organization. Their trade organization sets the standards for their entire trade. And they have a huge problem with the potential litigation if the public were to find out that they have probably poisoned over 95% of our population with these dental amalgams. And if you have a child that's born to a mother with amalgam fillings, it readily crosses the placenta barrier and the breast milk, and this child is predisposed to any other exposures, and that includes thimerosal, which is ethyl mercury, as you know, in vaccines, and by the way, it's in many other medications. Many. So it, you know, you think you're safe if you have, maybe you're not going to vaccinate your child, you think you're safe. No, you have to be diligent. You have to check every medication that you administer to anyone, and it's in the most unusual places.
I think it's really so interesting. When I first went into medicine, you know, back in the 1950s, I graduated from medical school in 1953. And, you know, at that time, why, you had an open wound, or, you know, I had somebody with a laceration or something, why, you'd always paint the skin with methylate. It was red, and it killed the bacteria, and it really did. It's very good at killing. The reason is, of course, it contained mercury. And then they found that a lot of the children were getting mercury put on their skin, were getting very ill, and some of them had permanent changes, and some of them died. And they found that it was actually poisoning for the methylate. So methylate certainly was actually outlawed. You couldn't even buy it anymore because, you see, it was too toxic to put on the skin. But it was all right to put in the vaccines. And then for 20 or 30 years, while we're giving toxic doses, large toxic doses, in case of the hepatitis B vaccine, which they insisted being given in the nursery, when there was no reason at all for it, because the incidence of hepatitis B in the general the general population of this country, unless you're homosexual, unless you're an IV drug user, unless you are, a prostitute or extremely sexually promiscuous, the incidence is almost nil.
That's right.
And yet, of course, we insisted on giving it to every child there, up to 85 times the maximum toxic dose allowed by the EPA. And Dr. Hilleman, who was the chief vaccinologist for Merck, actually sent an email back in 1991 telling them what they were doing to our children. And you know what they did? They continued those policies. Why would you do something like that unintentionally?
Well, you watch these people when they have had scientists from some of the finest scientific pools in the world. I was there at the Institute of Medicine hearing in February of 2004. I have 9 hours of videotape. The only scientist who said anything that was sort of milk toast about mercury in any of these medications were the ones that were seated there by the CDC. They all had conflicts of interest.
In other words, they either worked for the government or were some of them associated with the vaccine companies?
That's right, but it's even worse than that. Some of them worked for the CDC, and they're protecting themselves because they allowed this to happen. The scientists who were invited to come who had no conflicts of interest, every single one of them was visibly and emotionally upset, told the committee that we have a problem, and they were a majority of the scientists who testified that day. A majority.
And, of course, then the Institute of Medicine, many of the people on there had conflicts of interest, said, oh, well, there's just nothing to worry about, and they released that report, thus deceiving the American people, deceiving the parents, so they could continue to hurt the children.
Well, there is a document that they have refused to give through the Freedom of Information Act that shows, allegedly, that the CDC directed the Institute of Medicine to find no link between autism and thimerosal. They won't release the document. There was a judge, I believe, in Arizona who recently demanded to see it in a court action. I don't know that it has been released yet. But the other interesting thing is that there were a couple of scientists who had gotten into the CDC's data link, the vaccine safety data link.
That would be Mark and David Geyer.
We've interviewed
them. Fascinating. Go ahead.
Right, they are. They're wonderful, fascinating. Anyway, they had, at the behest of a few members of Congress on the Committee for Government Reform, they had been asked to go in and review that data. And in 2 years, they were able to get into their database twice. They had all kinds of excuses why they couldn't get in. You know, the dog ate it. You can't come today.
Now, this is the CDC had the excuses, not Mark and David Geyer.
That's right. Well, they were trying. And, I mean, you know, this is tantamount to the weapons inspectors going to Iraq. Or, you know, you could also say that they were like guardian ad litem for Congress members. And when they did get in there, it was right before the Institute of Medicine hearings. And they had maybe a week or so to prepare, and they prepared their statistics and reported it to the IOM, and it wasn't pretty. And within 3 days after that hearing, there was this nonsensical letter that went out from Kaiser Primera in California, who said that, oh, there's a confidentiality problem with these guys looking at the database. By the way, all the names and so forth are coded, so there's no confidentiality problem. And we can't let them in there anymore. A complaint went to the Institute of Medicine, because that's underneath the National Academies of Science, and they, you know, they're supposed to be an objective third party. And a complaint went out, and there was an investigation. And a few months later, they found that the CDC lacked transparency, that they need to separate their vaccine promotion portion of the CDC and the prevention of disease portion, where they're supposed to be protecting the American public. This was not given hardly any press at all. It was maybe 16 pages back in the New York Times. I think the LA Times picked it up a little bit. But our press has not been asking any of the hard questions, and it's really interesting if you take a look at what happened on their board of directors. They have people there that are basically advertisers. A good portion of them come from the pharmaceutical industry. They run it, they're captain of the ship. It's no small wonder that we're not getting the information.
In other words, you're talking about the media not telling us the truth about what's going on.
Well, that's right.
And I think for our listeners, they really need to understand what has actually happened. There, Kaiser Permanente is a very, very large HMO here on the West Coast. There were two large HMOs, and they had given children different types of vaccines. Some of them got DPT, that's diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus, a DPT vaccine with thimerosal. Others got it without thimerosal. In other words, without the mercury. And there was a dramatic difference between those two groups. And that was what the Kaiser Permanente data bank showed. And the other large HMO had done exactly the same thing.
Yeah, group
one,
health.
One, big pardon?
That was group health.
Right.
Yeah, you're talking about the Verstraten study?
Right.
Yeah.
And so the CDC knew the terrible danger, the terrible damage that was being done to the minds of our children, and condemning many of these children to a life of simply like being in solitary confinement. They couldn't communicate. They were in the house, in the household, but they weren't part of the household.
That's right.
They knew what they were doing to our children, and they covered this up. And when Dr. Mark Geyer and his son went down and looked at the database, why, they did everything they could to keep them from getting into the database, not telling them how even to use the computer if it had not been for somebody working at the CDC, a woman who had a childhood mind had been destroyed by the vaccines, who actually came in, risked her job to let them get into the data bank to see what it showed, and it showed devastating differences. I mean, massive differences between the group that, you know, got the mercury and the group that didn't. And that's the one thing that the people of the CDC do not want people to know, is that they are intentionally and purposely allowing the destruction of the minds of our children. That's what's so unconscionable.
Oh, there isn't an adjective that really rightly describes how badly they have harmed our babies. It's really a tough one.
And so much of this, anybody wants to verify this, is a wonderful book called Evidence of Harm by David Kirby. Evidence of Harm by David Kirby. And if you want to know more about that, we'll tell you later where you can get more information. That's such an important book. Have you read it, Christy?
I've ordered it.
All right, fine. But it's such an important book. And let me suggest that to our listeners. It's all very well documented. We have many other sources to verify what David Kirby has said, having talked to Dr. Mark and David Geyer. After they came back and found something like a 27 times difference between the two groups, you know, this is criminal. But then, of course, who are you going to report it to? Members of Congress cannot get into this material. Everything is being done to block the truth from coming out. Why would that be? We're going to be back here in just a moment or two. If you'd like to call us, if you have a question or comment, our guest, of course, is Christy Diamond at our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Christy, go ahead and pick up the story there.
Well, one, I, as you were talking about the Geyers being into the database, I was thinking about one of the things that I had discussed with them, and that was that in 20 years, we're going to have an entire nation run by adult autistic children. Now, that's a scary thought. I'm going to be a senior citizen then, and I'm going to be cared for by an autistic adult child.
Well, because these are children that they may not have all the signs of mercury poisoning, but they have enough mercury in their brain, not only what they got from the thimerosal and the vaccines, but the mercury that they've absorbed from their fillings and the mercury they've absorbed from the fish and the mercury they've gotten from the air and water. And if there was just a little bit of mercury, you could put up with it, but not the toxic doses that they've targeted at the American children.
It's over the top, way over the top.
And in fact, they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people. Do you know a better way to destroy a nation than destroy a whole generation of children?
That's right. And we've got a 30-year generation cohort here who have been damaged. And hopefully, we will find some medical protocols with which to retrieve them back. I know that there's a number of people, scientists alike, working on this right now, including the Geyers. Boyd Haley is another one. But the combination of amalgam with this injection of thimerosal into the body, it's a delivery system that's very effective to deliver this powerful neurotoxin. And, you know, you can't get a better delivery system than injecting it or having it implanted permanently right next to the brain.
And, of course, mercury is known to be one of the most toxic substances in the world. So why are we putting it in the vaccines? Why are we putting it in the fillings? And why are the people who try to bring out the truth about this attacked by the media and demonized and marginalized? And, in fact, in certain states in the country today, if a dentist gets up and says what I've been saying tonight, why he would lose his medical license. They would come after him. They would take away his license, and he would lose his means of livelihood. And most dentists aren't really willing to do that, are they?
No, not many of them. And actually, part of the mercury toxicity picture is that the ability to be courageous kind of goes away, and they become kind of meek, mild, kind of a following kind of a person. Another one is you'll get extreme irritability, where they're totally out of control and maybe violent, and it goes along with the suicide. Or they do really crazy things. You know, I'm sure many of the things that we see on the news every night are people who have reached their toxicity levels where they have lost control.
Because it's a cumulative thing, isn't it?
It's cumulative.
The mercury, certainly the fish, the air, the water, and then, of course, the fillings. That people have to understand that in Sweden, they don't allow this. In certain countries in Europe, they don't allow mercury fillings because they know how toxic they are.
That's
here
right.
In America, why anybody says that? Why, he must be some sort of a right-wing fanatic who believes in black helicopters.
Well, of course, you know where the fish got the mercury.
Where did they get the mercury?
They got it from the dental offices.
You mean they were dumping it down the drains?
Because they're dumping it down the drain. You know, everybody thinks, oh, it's just a small amount. But if you just do a simple sixth grade math problem, story question, and you figure out how many mercury fillings end up going down the drain, you'll find it's just an egregious amount of mercury. In San Francisco, they required traps on their dental offices.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Christy Diamond. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Christy Diamond. We're talking about mercury toxicity. And Christy was saying, asked me, where are the fish that we're so concerned about? You know, the fish, the tuna fish and the swordfish and the others have mercury. And she said, where does the mercury come from? And I asked her, where does it come from? She says it comes from the dental fillings. That, you know, the dentists take the dental fillings out. And they're not silver fillings when they say that. And so, no, they are mercury fillings. They're 50% mercury. And she was saying that in San Francisco, they require them to have mercury traps there in the dental offices. Pick up the story there.
This is relatively recently, just in the past couple of years. And just this last year, the stats came back. After a year of having traps, they reduced the amount of mercury being dumped into San Francisco Bay by 95%. And in King County, up in our in the Seattle area where I'm from, they required for King County dentists to have traps as well. Now, we don't have those kind of nice stats that San Francisco got. Instead, what happened here was just a few weeks ago, they established a sort of a policing agency where they are now going to go after dentists because they were non-compliant about putting traps on and doing this. Because, of course, no one's going around and checking them. They had a grace system where they said, oh, we'll do it. You just ask us. We'll take care of it. And, you know, of course, if they don't have any agency going around checking on them or certifying them, they don't.
But I don't think that the dentist, average dentist, really realizes how terribly toxic the substance he's working is. Because he's always told there's nothing to worry about. And then the next thing he's told, well, there's nothing to worry about, but don't put it down the drain. So he really doesn't know what to believe. Because I believe the dentists are victims of this whole situation as well, aren't they?
I agree completely with that. They are. But they're also, it's difficult, because of their exposure, it's difficult for them to understand this. One of the reasons I put together that videotape of the vapor coming off an extracted amalgam tooth in our documentary, Mercury of Slow Death, one of the reasons that I did that was a picture is worth a million words and a video is worth a quazillion words. You stand there and you watch that vapor come off in our special lighting situation. It's basically a black light. And you watch that vapor come off. It looks just like smoke coming off a lit cigarette. And all of a sudden, you know, I find every single person who sees that, their fingers go to their mouth, and they start counting, and they look for a mirror to see how many they have in their mouth. Because it's a shock. It's a shock for most people. You know, a lot of people right now, just because of the marketing that's going on out in the public, they think, oh, they don't use those anymore. But guess what? They do. They use them at least 70% of the practices still. And some of these dentists, I am still hearing stories daily of some dentist whose mother, who had a child, and the mother said, I want the white fillings. I don't want those silver fillings. Please don't put them in. And the dentist is so toxic, he puts them in anyway. And the mother goes crazy and, you know, has them, and meanwhile, the child has had a huge exposure. A huge exposure. Because the dentist is so toxic that they don't even realize what they're doing. They don't take it seriously. And these poor guys, you know, they're basically being set up to be the fall guy for the litigation. And they don't even know it.
Well, I think it's very, very difficult for them to believe that their medical, the dental school training was certainly improper. But even more than that, that they're being lied to by the American Dental Association and certainly by their local medical association here in California, the California Dental Association. And they know that they're in real trouble because the information is getting out on the Internet and people are beginning to find out. And here in California recently, they even passed a law that said you could not put any mercury in the vaccines. And they did everything they could to block that, but to Arnold Schwarzenegger's credit and with the help of the radical legislature we have in Sacramento, I don't like them on most issues, but on this issue they were right on, and they did the right thing, and thank goodness the Republicans weren't able, of course, to block the legislation, so at least they've got the mercury out of the vaccines here in California with. Of course, they're trying to counter that with some sort of a federal bill. Is that SB3, a federal bill?
They're trying all kinds of backdoor political tricks to do that. They talked about that bill up here in Olympia in Washington as well and tried to use it as an excuse to not pass our ban of thimerosal.
Did you actually get the ban through up there?
Not yet.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand that poisoning your children. When you understand that, a lot of things begin to make sense, especially when you read Bertrand Russell's writing talking about how through diet and injections and injunctions we'll be able to mold the minds of our children. That covers page 50 of his book, The Impact of Science on Society. If you'd like to get the page, we'll be glad to send it to you. You need to understand, we actually have permission from the publisher to give it to you. We'll be glad to understand there really are wicked people who would use diet, injections, and injunctions to poison our children. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I really do believe that this is such a vitally important issue. I mean, who would possibly want to hurt a child? And yet, of course, if the mother has, of course, mercury fillings, why that mercury is venting. Would you like to sort of talk a little bit about the video? In fact, it's pretty very impressive. You have in this video something called a smoking tooth. Now, I thought the title of the video was Uninformed Consent. Is it? What is it now?
Well, the title of the video is Mercury, a Slow Death, and it's produced by our nonprofit organization called Uninformed Consent.
I see. Okay, go ahead.
And a lot of people have picked it up as Uninformed Consent.
Okay, fine.
We also have a couple of DVDs that we call DocuNews, where you can actually go and educate yourself through video screens on a DVD about each scientist who testified at the Institute of Medicine in February last year.
And you actually have all that available on DVD?
I do. I have that all available on DVD. And our documentary will be available on DVD as well pretty soon.
All right, because people have to understand that these hearings are held, but when they pack the commission with people who are going to do what they're told to do, why, you're not going to get a fair appraisal, and especially when many of the people on these commissions have a conflict of interest. Now, they're not supposed to be conflicts of interest, but there are conflicts of interest, aren't there?
Yes, there are. And I'll give you one that just really took me right down to my knees. The chair of the committee, Maria McCormick, she is a professor at the Harvard School of Public Health. And so I got online and I looked up the Harvard School of Public Health, and I looked up their financial statements, basically. And they have a budget of around $319 to $325 million a year. That money is funneled through that through the National Institutes of Health.
In other words, it's coming from the government that is part and parcel of the problem.
But that's not the end of it. The National Institutes of Health is also sort of a quasi-nonprofit kind of a group. It's a government group, true. But they get their money from the Department of Health and Human Resources right underneath the administration. And so, it comes straight from the top. And it's been that way for a long time.
There have been a number of articles recently pointing out that a number of the scientists who work for the NIH just happen to be getting large sums of money or grants or gifts from the various drug companies.
That's right. And why don't you say, you know, wonderful things about, you know, our drug and get it approved through the FDA.
It wouldn't be quite that obvious, but you remember, whoever pays the piper calls the tune. We'll be back in just a moment with Christy. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we were just talking about how the people, of course, who were on the Institute of Medicine Committee, the chairman came from Harvard, from the School of Public Health, which gets a lot of money from the NIH. And, of course, at the NIH are a number of scientists who are taking gratuities or gifts or call it what you will, grants from the drug company. Now they're getting a large government salary, and then they get all sorts of goodies in addition to that. And of course, they say, well, we are honest people. You don't think just because they're giving us large sums of money, it would influence our positions. And I would say, why wouldn't we think that? We've seen over and over again corruption of science, where scientists have come up with phony conclusions simply because they were being paid by the drug companies to do it. And if you are in a university and you are doing a study for the drug company and you don't come up with the conclusions they want, you don't get any more grants. And if you don't get any more grants, you can't do any more scientific studies. If you can't do any more scientific studies, then your academic career is over. And, you know, scientists will tell you off the record that this is exactly how the system works, and the honest ones get out of science or find some other means of making a living, and, well, but you go along, you get along, and when you've got a wife and family and kids, and you've got to, you know, to provide for their education, and you have to provide for their health care, and you have the house payments, it's pretty hard to stand up and say, what is going on is wrong and it's immoral. So we do hope that many of you out there will understand the background of that. And if you'd like those clippings, we have those out of the various newspapers pointing out that scientists at the National Institute of Health, which is funding then so much of the money that's going to the people who, at least the School of Medicine, that the public school at Harvard, that and of course the head of this committee on the IOC, was doing this, and she said, why, nobody would want to hurt children. Well, of course the people would want to hurt children. Here in the United States today, we abort over 3 million children every year. You mean nobody wants to hurt children? It's between 1 and 3 million. I don't know the figures, but it's estimated that somewhere around 40 to 45 million children have been aborted since Roe versus Wade went in. And anybody who says, why, nobody would want to hurt children, of course they want to hurt them. They know exactly what they're doing. There really are evil and wicked people out there. So with that as the background, of course, Christy is talking about the Institute of Medicine hearings, and there were people on that committee that really did have conflicts of interest, weren't there?
Oh, yes, there were many of them. And, you know,
and in fact, who actually appointed the people on the Institute of Medicine committee?
Well, they would apply and volunteer, and they're supposed to be people that were taken from the general public who practice out all over the nation. They had them on an honor system. When I asked them, well, did you do a background check on these people? They said, no, we don't do a background check on these people because, you know, why should we, you know, unless we get a complaint? Well, first of all, the public doesn't even know that these people are being evaluated to be on the committee. Now, these people are making decisions that affect 290 million people in the United States. But if you were to go out to get a mortgage for your home, they would run a background check on you, a credit check on you. They would look at your bank accounts. They would look at your pay stub, anything, if you had any kind of legal things against you. For less than a $20,000 loan, they would do all this stuff. But with people who have the social responsibility to take care and look out for 290 million people, they don't do a background check.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, Chris, you attended the Institute of Medicine meeting in 2004. Has there been any other Institute of Medicine meeting since then?
Not that I'm aware of. They did have a secret press conference right before a huge rally that took place a few weeks ago, actually, in Washington, D.C., that was heavily attended by parents of autistic children.
About how many people showed up, do you recall?
It's my understanding about 750 people, which is a good chunk of people for only about a two, three-week notice, really.
All right.
And that was in celebration of Robert Kennedy's article that was published in Rolling Stone and Salon.com, Deadly Immunity.
Now, that was Robert Kennedy Jr., wasn't it?
That's right.
And he had actually been looking into this. I assume this is Robert Kennedy's son?
It's his nephew.
It's his nephew. When he realized what they were doing to our children, he actually wrote an article and it was published.
Maybe I had that wrong, but...
Under many circumstances. The Kennedy name is there, Robert Kennedy Jr. But he had written an article about this, pointing out how they're poisoning the children. And of course, it got the conspiracy of silence. It's up on the Internet, but you're not going to see this discussed by the New York Times, certainly.
Well, no. As a matter of fact, our organization put out a fairly lengthy article on the New York Times effort to lambast him, Dr. Geyer, and Dr. Boyd Haley as well. They tried to marginalize these people, which, you know, was almost laughable. They actually went as far to describe the Geyers as, they sort of depicted them as trailer trash and so forth. And the Geyers live in a luxurious house in a luxurious neighborhood in Maryland. They've got a tennis court and a lap pool, hot tub, and yes, he does have a world-class lab in his basement, along with two other labs that he has in outside businesses. This man is a scientist. You know, a lab to him is like most guys, you know, idealistic idea of having a shop for their car to work on. For him, having a lab in his basement is great fun. And he has a wonderful place, and I was just blown away that they could even depict it the way they did in the New York Times.
Well, of course, freedom of the press means that if you can control the press, why, you can have the freedom to distort the news any way you want to. And what the public really must understand is that there had been an organized, orchestrated effort, and it was about, maybe 3 or 4 months ago, when articles appeared in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and in all the local newspapers, in Time Magazine, in U.S. News and World Report, in Newsweek Magazine, and on all the major television networks, talking about the autism epidemic. And we had no idea where it was coming from, but we could assure you it had nothing to do with thimerosal, and do not get your child treated. If you love your child, don't get them treated for that. Why, if you got them treated for the mercury, why, it might hurt their liver or kidney. Just leave them there with their mind being destroyed by the mercury. But we have no treatment for it, but I mean, we want to assure you that there are no treatments, and yet, I'm sure you know, Christy, as anybody who's studying this, that the treatments do help the children, and many children have made dramatic recoveries. And why would the media, both the conservative and the liberal media, come out with articles that were all based upon lies, discouraging treatment that would help children to recover much of their function?
Why would they? I mean, you know, I mean, what do you think? I think it's scary. I think it's sinister. I mean, these people are going way beyond. I mean, they've been told the truth. They know what the truth is. There really is no argument with the science. I mean, to argue the science on this is absolutely absurd and ridiculous. Yet they are bending over backwards to lie. I mean, they are outright lying to the public and to their trade organization and to other doctors and other scientists. And these people don't have time to go look up the truth. And they believe them, and so they carry the torch. Yeah, why? Why are they going out of their way to do this?
Well, have you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness?
Oh, no, I haven't.
Well, I'll tell you what. I will, at the end of the program, I will put you on hold, and I'll have our producer, Herman, get your address, and we'll send you a copy of my book. And if
I
you read my book, you'll probably, it doesn't, we're not talking about vaccinations. We're talking about geopolitics. We're talking about history. We're talking about the fact that there really are people who have a different worldview, who see nothing wrong with doing terrible things and creating wars and revolutions and, yes, even epidemics, for that matter. They really look at the world differently than you and I do. They march to a different drumbeat. They worship a different God. And when you understand that, then, of course, all of these things begin to make sense. So when you understand, in my estimation, we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, but in this instance, on a medical battlefield. And, of course, the casualties are the minds of a whole generation of our children. So we'll get you that information, Christy.
I would love that.
Because, of course, maybe I can talk you into getting me those DVDs that you have, talking about, because I really think this is so important that the people see what happened at the Institute of Medicine meeting. And do you actually have some of the pictures of the people on the other side who said there's nothing to worry about?
Yes. I was being totally objective when I put these films together. It's an abstract of every scientist who testified, including Marie McCormick and Dave Weldon, who is a congressman, who was the keynote speaker that day.
Well, of course, Congressman Dave Weldon is really a hero. He's actually a physician who gave up his medical practice, and he's been in Congress for a number of years trying to do the right thing and trying to get the truth out on this issue, and been blocked at every turn. In fact, the CDC, which is a government agency, financed by money that's appropriated by Congress, did everything they could to block him from getting the information on something called the Simpson-Wood meeting back in... Do you know anything about the Simpson-Wood meeting? Would you want to actually comment on that?
Oh, yeah, I know about the Simpson-Wood meeting.
Why don't you tell them about that? Because here was a meeting that was a meeting on the danger of the mercury and the vaccines. It was top secret.
That's right.
And they wouldn't, it was financed by the government, and they wouldn't let even the congressman know. Tell the story.
Well, what they did is they had a secret meeting of, and it consisted of members of the FDA, the CDC, the National Institute of Health, and pharmaceutical executives as well. They didn't invite anybody else. And they had it in Atlanta, in an area, they call it the Simpson Wood, because it was a Simpson Wood Meeting Center, there in the Atlanta area in Georgia. And that is where they presented the first public findings, quasi-public findings of the Verstraten study, where they found an absolutely spectacular link between mercury and autism by a scientist by the name of Thomas Verstraten.
Right, okay.
And he was under fellowship at the CDC at the time.
He was a physician, and he had actually done a statistical study and showed that there was a definite relationship between the thimerosal and the vaccines, and of course, the incidence rising, and skyrocketing incidence of autism.
And they spent a couple of hours. If you read the transcript, it's fairly lengthy and dry. But if you read the transcript, you'll find that they spent a couple of hours talking about the study, and the rest of the weekend they spent trying to derail the study, and at the end, they embargoed the information from the public.
They could have
made it public and saved thousands and thousands of babies from this demise.
And, of course, the thing is that they knew what was going on. Some of the people there, one of them said, well, I just had a grandchild born last night, and they're not going to get any of these vaccines.
That's right.
But they didn't have the courage to say, we don't want other people's children to get the vaccine.
Well, of course, this transcript was leaked by somebody in that audience. I'm quite sure that they weren't in total 100% agreement on embargoing the information from the public. And during that three-year period that it wasn't in the public, they took another HMO and attempted to water down the statistics so that there was no link between autism and mercury.
Well, figures don't lie, but liars figure. And then the most fascinating thing about this is one of the major producers of these toxic vaccines that have been destroying our children's minds is GlaxoSmithKline in French. So they hired Dr. Verstraten. Now, of all the scientists in the whole world, why would they hire the one that had showed that their product was destroying the minds of our children?
When he went to
work for them, why, suddenly everything changed. And he then published an article in the Journal of Pediatrics claiming that he worked for the CDC, which he didn't. He worked for GlaxoSmithKline in French, which stands to lose tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars if the truth ever comes out that they've been poisoning the children. And Glaxo said, why, we didn't hire him just to change his opinion. And Dr. Verstraten said, why, I would never have changed my opinion just because I'm working for the people that I pointed out what they were doing to destroy the minds of the children.
I've had a suspicion that Verstraten may have thought he was really onto something and didn't realize the political ramifications of it. And I think that he may be living in fear himself.
I think that anybody who really realized what's at stake here, we're dealing with ruthless people. If they would destroy the minds of children, would they hesitate to destroy a scientist who was about to expose them?
I would say I don't think they would hesitate. They've certainly gone after some really, really good, honest people who have spent an entire life learning about this stuff, and who are very articulate, and who have risked everything, to get the information out to us.
And Dr. Geyer has certainly done a great job. Dr. Blaylock has actually gotten that study, the Simpson-Wood study, and has done, you can read that back on the internet at mercola.com. That's mercola.com. If you'd like to get the entire study, you can call Congressman David Weldon. That's Congressman David Weldon. They're two there. Don't get them mixed with Kurt Weldon. It's David Weldon. And they'll actually email you the entire study. It's about 256 pages. We have it. But it's a lot easier for you to pull it down off the internet than for us to copy it, because that's quite an undertaking. But
actually, Dr. Stan, I've got it up on our site.
Oh, you do?
Uninformedconsent.org. And
okay.
you can just push a link right on the front page, and it'll come. The whole transcript will come up, and you can print it all out.
And that's uninformedconsent.org?
.org, right. Uninformedconsent.org.
All right.
We tried to put all the documentation that was in Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s article that backed his claims up right on the front page, so you could look at it, as well as...
Is his article there as well?
There's a link right to it, yes.
All right, fine. So go to uninformedconsent.com. Is it org or com?
Either one will get you there.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're out there in the listening audience, you think this is a lot of foolish talk. Well, if we're not telling the truth, you'll be able to soon disprove it, but go to Christie's website, and of course there's so many other websites, mercury.com and Moms Against Mercury, and you know, or certainly David Kirby's book, Evidence of Harm. And if you'd like to know more about that, the telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get more information, Evidence of Harm by David Kirby, I think, is one of the most outstanding and important books I've ever read. And when you finish reading this book, there will be no question in your mind that they know there's evidence of harm, and they don't want the American people to know. Christy, do you want to put your telephone number out there, please?
Yes, it's 425-487-2358.
One more time.
425-487-2358.
And that's uninformed...
Consent.org
or .com. That's uninformedconsent.org or .com.
And we're bringing the truth out is what our goal is, and we're competing with large media organizations to bring real reporting back, real journalism.
And believe me, the New York Times and the Washington Post and Newsweek and Time and U.S. U.S. News and World Report and the major networks all coordinated an attack to conceal this information from the American people. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Christy Diamond. Let's go to Roger calling from from Allentown. Roger, thank you for hanging on. Did you have a question for our guest?
I was hoping you could help flesh out a lie here that was, I mentioned that Arthur Kirby was on across from, well, with Tim Russert across from Dr. Harvey Fineberg a week and a day ago. And well, a couple of whopper quotes here first. Now, you folks would be embarrassed to say stuff like this, of course. But he argues that in defense of mercury, that studies of high concentration poisoning incidents would bear out that the ethyl form is less toxic than the methyl form. So the argument, I guess, is that a somewhat less poisonous form of a highly toxic poison means not to worry. And then he went on to discourage chelation to get rid of mercury, adding the irrelevancy that there are no controlled studies to show the effectiveness of chelation. Of course, leaving out that there's not much money in it to actually finance such studies. And then he says, other avenues of research are more promising ways to spend our money, that is, to find the causes of autism. Translation, look for other causes, but whatever you do, don't look at mercury.
And do not treat your child, because the child, in all likelihood, would get better. You've got to be pretty rotten to try to block the use of treatment which are being used all across the country. Doctors, of course, are doing this, are usually demonized by the medical profession, who are being, of course, financed in large part by the major drug companies. Well,
yeah,
thank you so very much, Roger. We're just about out of time, and I just got to say goodnight to Christy, but thanks so much. And point is well made. Well, Christy, do you have anything to sort of wrap up the program with?
Well, I would I would say to your listeners that it is just critical that you become vigilant and informed about what's going on in the world around you. Otherwise, you're going to end up becoming crippled with the toxicity diseases that we're seeing. Because in the bigger picture, one of the reasons that they may be trying to cover up this autism issue is because it's more than autism. It may be diabetes. It may be obesity. It may be asthma. It may be MS. The list goes on and on. Cardiac disease, cancer. All of these conditions may be related to this toxicity level, and I see a lot of compelling evidence that it is, and you'll find that the next time you talk to the Geyers, they're going to tell you that that's some of the things that they have found in the database as well, something we've suspected for a very long time.
Well, I will get the Geyers on here in the very near future. Christy Diamond has been our guest today from uninformedconsent.com. God bless you for everything you do, and we're going to look forward to having you on all of our programs. We think your information is so vitally important, and I'm going to just put you on hold and have you go ahead and talk to our producer, okay?
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jeff.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I'm going to ask our producer to pick up the call and get the address there. And, of course, we're going to send Christy a copy of my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Her question was, why would anybody want to hurt children? why would anybody want to do this? Well, I think my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, explains the very essence of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged. A battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. And if you'd like, of course, more information, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. Now, we do hope that if you'd like to get, any specific information on Mercury, Mercury toxicity, Mercury as far as the fillings are concerned, why, we'd be glad to send you, free of charge, information on dental amalgams and, of course, what is known about the danger of dental amalgams. And you can go, of course, on the Internet at many of the websites we've talked about that have covered this. Certainly Dr. Boyd Haley has excellent information on his website as well. Let me suggest, of course, that you go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And there's information there on autism. There's information there on Mercury. In fact, if you'd like to know more about the Christy Diamond's video, it's called Uninformed Consent, at least that's what we call it. If you like, first you can first check with our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. We think that you need to know what's happening to your children and to your grandchildren. Because, of course, when we're dealing with one in every six American children having either a neurodevelopmental abnormality and or a learning disability, and you realize that almost all of our children have massive mercury toxicity of their brains, and of course, but they may be able to handle it. In other words, certain children can't handle it and are very, very sensitive. Other children can handle it, but then, of course, with the mercury fillings, and then eating the fish, and then breathing the air, of course, the mercury in the air adjacent to coal-burning plants, power plants, and certainly in the water. Why, then eventually you get such a mercury load that you begin getting the toxic effects as you grow older. And any of you have any question at all about the relationship between taking the influenza vaccine, which doctors will tell you, and their doctors mean very well when they tell you to take the influenza vaccines. But according to Dr. Fudenberg, who is in his 80s, he's the dean of vaccinologists in this country, having written many of the standard texts on vaccination and vaccination manufacture. He points out that if you are between 60 and 65, and you take 3 to 4 mercury shots over a 5-year period, 10 years down the line, your chance of getting Alzheimer's disease is 1,000% increase, tenfold increase. Now, if you think that that really couldn't be true, if it were true, of course, why, you would know about it. Let me suggest that you're not getting about it, hearing about it, because there really are people who have a different agenda, who want a different type of America. If you'd like to get the reference to Dr. Fudenberg's website, or like just to send you a printout of his website, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. 8927, and simply ask for Dr. Fudenberg's reprint, and we'll be glad to send that to you free of charge. And then, of course, we want you to understand that the influenza vaccine contains mercury. The vaccine that they're giving to 6-month-old children contains toxic doses of mercury, and they know that those are toxic doses of mercury. And if it'll do that to an adult taking them, for 2 to 3 times or 3 to 4 times over a 5-year period, what do you think it does to a 6-month-old child? Please understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a medical battlefield, on a cultural battlefield, on a political and ideological battlefield, a battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and for our ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, when we'll be back with you, this is Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you.